This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is Matthew Staver, the founder and dean of the Liberty University Law School. He's head of Liberty Counsel, and he and his colleagues have also gone line by line, page by page, through the Democratic-sponsored health care plan. We've talked a lot on this program about the cost. We've talked about the possibility of higher taxes. We've talked about the possibility of much greater government intervention in health care and maybe even rationing, but it goes even further than that. And Matt, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be with you.
Well, this bill is about 1,000 pages long. Explain real briefly for our listeners before we get to some of the details here how exactly you combed through this.
Well, we actually read through the entire bill. It's 1,100 and some pages long, and the only way to figure out what's in the bill is to read it, something that John Conyers, a Democrat from Michigan, says, well, you need 2 days and two lawyers to do it. So he scoffed at the idea that he would do it. He thought it was just kind of laughable that he would actually read a bill that he would actually vote on, which many of the people in Congress are not able to read the bill because it's going through so fast. You know, President Obama, when he was campaigning, he criticized the Bush administration for going into the Iraq war, saying that things were rushed through. People did not get a chance to know all of the facts, and he used an emergency situation to try to rush through the war in Afghanistan and later Iraq. Well, exactly what we're doing here is the same thing that he criticized President Bush for, but this isn't going into war. It's actually something that could be the poison pill, the suicide pill, so to speak, of our economy and of our freedom of choice in our healthcare system.
Well, let's talk about some of the provisions that are contained in this legislation. Now, we've heard certainly the debate from those opposed to the plan that this could end up costing Americans a lot of money, but you found on page 59 of this bill that not only will it cost us more, but the government will have direct access to our bank accounts.
Yeah, the government will have direct access to your bank account. It sets up a national ID health card that will be issued. They'll have real-time access to your individual finances. It's amazing what you will actually give up with this particular bill. They'll have access to your bank accounts for purposes of, get this, electronic funds transfer. The government will be able to do that. You want some bureaucrat up in Washington, D.C., having the ability to transfer money out of your account. That's what this particular bill will provide, among other things.
And another part in this section, actually in two different parts of the bill, it tells doctors that regardless of their expertise, regardless of their experience, whatever their specialty is, the government will mandate what sort of salary they'll make, and it turns out everyone's going to make the same.
That's right. The government provide annual participation of physicians under the public health insurance option, for which a payment will be made for services furnished during the year. They're going to actually set the payment of these doctors. They're going to put a payroll tax or some kind of a tax on small businesses. Any employer with payroll of $400,000 and above, which really covers all the small businesses that are typically out there, are going to have significant addition to their taxes. And most small businesses already struggle with just getting by with the taxes that they have to incur and the expenses and the rising gas costs. And this, of course, will add another burden on them.
Matt, on page 145, we see an apparent contradiction of the longstanding promise of the president and Democrats in Congress that if you like your current plan, nothing's going to change. According to this, it says an employer is going to be forced to enroll employees into the public option. Explain that.
That's right. The rhetoric that you're hearing from Obama and some of the people that are pushing this, like Nancy Pelosi through the House, they're saying, oh, this is just another public option. You can keep your own individual health care plan. Well, that's not actually true because eventually you'll be forced to move into this particular system. That's why Planned Parenthood is pushing so hard for this abortion provision, because they say that if you don't have abortion covered in this public plan, then abortion will never be covered because eventually everybody will be under this, except, of course, those in Congress who don't want to put themselves under this plan. They want to have them as the only ones outside of this plan. But everyone will eventually be pushed toward this plan, a government hugely run bureaucracy that no question in my mind is going to have more red ink bleeding as a result of it than Medicare and Medicaid do currently.
We're talking with Matthew Staver, head of Liberty Counsel, dean of the Liberty University Law School. And Matt, we've talked about, and we've even heard Obama administration officials admit that we could be seeing higher taxes placed upon the middle class in order to pay for this system if it in fact is approved. But there is one group in this country that will not be asked to pay for this, and that's non-resident aliens.
Non-resident aliens are not required to pay for it, but yet non-resident aliens will ultimately be covered by this particular proposal. And, you know, I don't know if most people in the country realize that what we're going to be doing is covering illegal aliens under this proposal without having any contribution from these individuals. And in fact, if your plan is not appropriate, you're going to have a 2.5% tax placed upon you. So the government bureaucrat is going to determine whether your plan is appropriate, and thus all this pressure for everyone to go under this system, including illegal aliens. And guess who's paying for it? It's the American taxpayer and small businesses.
Matt, there's also a section 1145, at least at this point, on page 272 of this bill. It always seems to be changing, trying to make other members happy to get enough votes to pass it. But it talks about evaluation of cancer hospitals, and you believe that this is code for rationing. Explain why.
There's no question that it's code for rationing, and in fact, there's several rationing provisions in here. If you listen to Ezekiel Emanuel, who's a doctor, and he's the brother of Rahm Emanuel, the chief of staff for Obama, and he has been advocating for much of the time, and he's one of the people behind this who's pushing this and in the background working on it, for healthcare rationing. And many people in the administration are advocating for healthcare rationing. John Conyers, who was just recently on C-SPAN a week ago, was talking about healthcare rationing. So what are you going to do? There are several different kinds of rationing that you will experience. First of all, the elderly and those with other kinds of dementia diseases will be rationed. You're not going to be able to get the kind of care you need. And those dollars that are allegedly saved from not caring for the elderly or those with, say, for example, dementia or other kinds of late-in-life kinds of illnesses, we're going to spread that around. So they're going to determine whether or not certain care is coming to you. But even before you get to the one end of the spectrum of life, if you have cancer or other kinds of treatments, but particularly cancer, they're going to determine whether the protocol is necessary. It's the government bureaucrat that's going to reduce and limit the kind and the amount and the type of treatment you get for cancer as well as other particular illnesses or conditions.
Matt, in pages 425 through 430, it gets even more detailed on the end-of-life situation, and you go into quite a bit of detail about the different provisions in there. Explain what the government is putting on paper here in terms of end-of-life care and how they expect the American consumer to deal with it.
Well, they expect that, in fact, you'll go through mandatory counseling, and the government will set up mandatory counseling for how to end your life. And they'll set up mechanisms for that to actually occur. And if you have certain kinds of illnesses, the mandatory counseling and the other kinds of pressure that you'll face are more frequent. They will increase the end-of-life counseling. So in other words, they're going to counsel you to not go through certain medical treatments so that your life just comes to an end. I mean, this is euthanasia, pure and simple. This is pushing the elderly off the cliff or those that have certain kinds of conditions off the cliff. This is another form of rationing. Let's just push the sick off the cliff, forget about them, and let's spread the public dollars around.
Oh, but we're just getting started on what's actually inside this Democratic version of health care reform. Look very soon for the next posting of the continuation of my conversation with Matt Staver, founder and chairman of Liberty Counsel and the dean of the Liberty University School of Law. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.